Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will spend some time revisiting our ongoing conversation on the global energy transition. In fact, back in August, CIO did publish an update of its view on the global energy transition. It does highlight that growing energy demand and regional geopolitics are making the transition more complex, to say the very least. So with that, one of the primary authors of the report and CIO's energy and utilities analyst for the Americas, Jay Dobson, joining me today here in studio in New York to break this all down for us. Jay, it's great to be back with you here on the podcast. I know we've spoken about this topic many times, but we're doing so today through a global lens. So looking forward to hearing your current thinking.
Yeah, Dan, thanks. It's always great to spend time with you on these topics. As you said, we've been doing it for a while, but great to get back on the horn and talk about these things.
Absolutely. So with that, Jay, a good starting point, perhaps we can level set it for our listeners. As I alluded to, this is a very complex topic. So seeing as we're on microphones, can you verbally paint a picture for us, Jay, with respect to the current global energy supply picture as a basis for the energy transition discussion today?
Yeah, Dan, it's a great place to start. When you really think, you know, we have to level set ourselves because, you know, energy is so ubiquitous to our lives. I mean, it's really such a part of our lives that we take it for granted, quite frankly. If we just think about oil, gasoline, natural gas, electricity in our home, propane, solar, wind power, think of all these things. I mean, it really is the lifeblood of the global economy and, quite frankly, the, you know, conveniences of our personal and professional lives. So to think about all of this energy, as you pointed out, on a global basis, we have to start with the idea that 80% of that is supplied by fossil fuels currently. The balance is renewables, hydro, nuclear, some really, really good, reliable technologies. But our starting point is 80% of fossil fuels. To also sort of put it in perspective, we spend globally about $10 trillion annually on energy. That's across the globe, across the spectrum of energy supplies. So, you know, this is a big expense and it's really important. So I think that's the starting point you have to have when you talk about an energy transition, or as we call it, energy transitions, which I'll explain in a second. But that's the starting point. I think the other thing we learned and is a good thing to keep in mind, and I wouldn't even say we learned it, we got reminded of it with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And that is, we talk about an energy transition and that is focused on decarbonization. But the reality is, we're also very focused on affordability and reliability, or energy security. And I think those are sort of, think of it as a three-legged stool. So, you know, we use a lot of fossil fuels, we spend a lot of money on them, and yet we really have to think of it as lower carbon, affordable, reliable as sort of our starting point. You know, the last thing I would remind people to, you know, sort of level set us is every region of the world's a little different. When you sort of look in particularly places that have natural resources abundance, like the U.S. has, you know, we think of coal, oil, natural gas. Then you look at Asia, for example, you know, not a lot of oil, not a lot of natural gas, a lot of coal, and hence that's why they use as much. You know, Europe imports almost all, or certainly imports a lot of its natural resources for energy. So every region's a little different. So again, that's why we called the report, this newest one, Energy Transitions, because it's sort of our sort of cute way of saying there's going to be a lot of these. They'll build up and add up to ultimately the global transition. But, you know, this is very regional in nature, and some areas are going to move faster, some slower, in the, you know, sort of plight of everyone moving on this energy transition. But that sort of level sets us with where we are in the sort of global energy landscape as we think about energy transition.
So now that we have a better understanding that progress may vary depending on where you are in the world from a regional standpoint, we have an understanding of the pillars involved in the energy transition. If we look across the globe, Jay, because again, this is not U.S.-centric, this is a global initiative, what stands out to you?
Yeah, the one phrase I'd want everyone to take away from this podcast and conversation, hopefully an ongoing series of the same, would be all of the above. The reality is we're going to need all sources. If you like renewables, we're going to need a lot of those. You know, if you like fossil fuels, we're still going to need a lot of those. Nuclear, hydrogen, carbon capture, think of them all. I think the important thing we have to keep in mind, and this added some complexity, quite frankly, to, you know, our consideration of the energy transition, is we're trying to transition while demand continues to grow. I mean, we have factors we've been focused on for, you know, 5 or 10 years now: population growth, urbanization across the globe. You know, we've got an energy poor segment across the globe, not obviously here in the developed world, but in other poor areas where people don't even have access to electricity. They don't have access to clean cooking fuels. That should move. That sort of helps, you know, sort of humankind, if you will. But we have these new elements like, you know, industrial growth and reshoring here in the developed world. You know, there's a lot of talk, as you know, as well as I do, on AIs and data centers and the amount of energy demand that they're driving. So we're seeing a tremendous amount of demand growth. I think the supply response is going to have to be that all of the above. And again, impacted by this, you know, sort of regional and geopolitical influences that we talk about. I think the other thing to keep in mind, Dan, is, you know, this is going to take a long time. I mean, I think policymakers make the mistake, and sometimes some media figures, you know, as if we're going to sort of snap our fingers and we're going to be able to, you know, replace fossil fuels or go to a net zero element. I mean, the reality is this will take a lot of time. We've never done this before. If I had a chart in front of you, we'd show how supplies have stacked on top of supplies over the last 100 years. Started with wood, then we added coal, then we added oil. But you never see any of those, you know, sort of products go down. Mm-hmm. We saw their growth slow, but we've additive transitions. Now we're looking at a full replace, or at least considering a replace transition. Never happened before. I think the closest I could come to having a comparison would be when, you know, the internal combustion engine car replaced the horse. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an interesting one. We could spend a whole podcast on that. Mm-hmm. But there are lots of concerns about manure and, you know, sort of sickness and disease that was coming from that. At the end of the day, the automobile took over from the horse largely for economic reasons. And it should there then imply that, yeah, this energy transition is going to happen. I love innovation in this country and, quite frankly, across the globe. But the reality is, you know, innovation is going to drive that. And we'll get there. It'll just take time.
So a marathon, not a sprint, to achieve resolution of this. And you did mention innovation, technological innovations. I know artificial intelligence, AI, has been an ongoing thematic conversation from the UBS Chief Investment Office in recent years. So with that in mind, Jay, how does the expansion of AI, data center demand, how do these factors impact all of this?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Dan. I mean, the AI sort of data center demand cycle has been amazing. I mean, when you really think about it, even in my energy world, we weren't talking about this 2 years ago. Sure. I wouldn't even say we were really thinking about it. You know, it was sort of like 18 months ago we started hearing about this, and now we're talking about, you know, giga data centers, a gigawatt. So that's 1,000 megawatts of a single data center energy demand, electricity demand.
What's going to power that?
Yeah, what's going to power that? But I think we also have to start with, like, you know, over the last 5 or 10 years, if you and I were having a discussion, I would have said, you know, large load, Dan, that's 50 megawatts, maybe 60 megawatts, a steel facility. And when we look at the dynamics of siting that, it was complicated. We always put it next to a power plant. We did a number of things to minimize the investment, transmission, all these other things. Now we have data centers, whether you're talking certain companies in hyperscalers in tech, saying we're going to have several gigawatt scale data centers, 1,000 megawatts.
Hard to imagine.
Yeah, it's unprecedented. So it not only tells you the amount of demand they're driving, it's just the challenge of the problem of meeting that supply. It's why we're seeing many of them think about siting next to nuclear plants and a lot of these other things. But, you know, again, I just want to reiterate what I said earlier. This is not just AI demand. This is, you know, urbanization, population growth, industrialization, you know, energy poor, and now AI and data center on top of that. So it's it's really, really important to keep the demand in focus, but accept that, yeah, it's complicating the transition because the, you know, demand growth is accelerating with AI and data center, and it's accelerating in the developed world. If we looked at a chart over the last 20 years, we'd say most of the demand growth for energy across the globe was driven by the developing world, and the developed world was sort of flattening out. We're about to see that inflect up, so now we're going to have the developed and the developing world, you know, rising in energy demand. So it definitely makes it more complicated. The only thing I would add, and I'm a pretty hopeful person, as you know, Dan, I mean, I do hold out hope. It's probably more intermediate and longer term that AI can help us solve some of these problems. You know, energy efficiency, thinking about how we can dispatch resources better, how we can, you know, really limit the amount of energy demand necessary. But that won't happen as fast as data centers are developing. So you can think of maybe, you know, big demand growth, and then maybe that moderates as we get a decade or so out. But yeah, AI and data centers are definitely impacting demand, and they're driving growth.
So keeping with the notion marathon, not a sprint, Jay, if we look at the near as well as long term, what energy supplies do you see as being most promising for this transition landscape?
Yeah, this energy transitions report we just published in mid or late August highlighted really three near-term winners. And again, I say near-term winners, Dan, it's not to say that we're picking technologies or, you know, there's an affordability and an economic issue to it, but you know, I think we have to say out loud, you know, it probably takes you, you know, 18 months to build a data center. To build a large utility scale power plant, it could take you 3 or 4 years with permitting, maybe 5 years. And that's, you know, known technology. You know, the last nuclear plant built in this country took 10 years. So, you know, we have a mismatch of the demand growth in data centers, which how fast sort of energy supplies respond. But with that disclaimer, I would say near-term existing supply, we're going to need more renewables. We can deploy those really quickly. So wind, solar, you know, you'll see a lot of that. Natural gas, you know, particularly here in the U.S., but I'd say in the developed world, you know, the natural gas market, I think, is probably a net benefactor. Those, you know, natural gas-fired power plants can cycle very effectively. Nuclear, I think this is really interesting. We see a lot of new nuclear developing in Asia. We see existing. We've had one new nuclear plant here in the U.S. I think nuclear will play a big role. Most of that will be at the margin by just running those plants a little harder and really making sure we make most use of the existing supply. Intermediate term, I'd say sort of batteries and storage are definitely moving forward. You know, the EV revolution has definitely advanced battery chemistries and technology. Longer term, hydrogen, carbon capture. I think nuclear is still going to be on that list. We think of small modular, maybe even fusion, you know, 10 or so years out. So there's a lot of exciting stuff here, but I would be remiss if I didn't say just, you know, good old-fashioned energy is going to be there. And I think what excites me, having looked at the energy business for the last 30 or so years, is, you know, the big companies that have been big oil and gas producers are very, very focused on engaging this energy transition and moving forward in an economic and affordable way to make sure they maximize, you know, both the globe's opportunity to transition and their opportunity to play a big role in that transition. That, I think, is very different than the way it was 5 years ago.
So, Jay, as you've outlined for us today, clearly many avenues out there that will be leveraged to achieve these transitions on a global scale. You spoke about some of these exciting emerging technologies, innovations, and play as well. So the question becomes, as an investor, well, how do I get involved? How do I participate? It might be overwhelming. So what kind of guidance can you provide in terms of how to invest in this theme?
Yeah, it's really the seminal question, right, Dan? We come up with all these themes, but so what does this mean for me? Let's frame it a little bit. You know, as I said, I'd love you to remember the phrase all of the above. So, you know, all things energy, there's probably going to be opportunity there. It may, you know, sort of rank order. Some may be slightly better than others, but all of the above is going to be necessary. Second, as I look out between here and 2050, and there's no magic to 2050, it's sort of just a round number halfway through the century. You know, between now and 2050, we see upwards of $100 trillion US dollars of investment potential in the energy transition. Mm-hmm. Now, when I say energy transition, I'm talking energy and energy transition because, you know, supply has to meet demand. So it's the overall investment. If I just think of the next 5 years, it's probably $10 to $20 trillion. So it's a big amount. So this is why hopefully folks have sort of opened their ears and said, wow, this is an opportunity. So then what do I do about it? You know, we mentioned in the last question, you know, renewables, natural gas, nuclear. Those would be very easy ways, public market equities that would buy you exposure to those, both existing supplies and incremental supplies. And then I would really, and we hope to be able to help our listeners going forward, to really continue to watch these emerging technologies. I mean, I would say today, hydrogen, though, you know, it's a great opportunity. It's still nascent in making it very clean. And we need to do work there. Some of these new nuclear technologies, carbon capture. But these are really exciting technologies that are going to have to play a big role. And I do believe there'll be big opportunities there. But right now, I would look at all of the above, our existing, you know, energy investments, fossil fuels, as I said, you know, nuclear, natural gas, renewables, very easy way to, you know, sort of put together an equity portfolio that would give you exposure to those names and be able to play this theme on an ongoing basis.
To that end, do encourage our clients listening in, do have a follow-up conversation with your UBS financial advisor if you would like to dive further into some of those implementation specifics, Jay, which you alluded to. Though, thank you as always. As I always say when we have this conversation, it will in fact continue, though a great catching up with you today to see where the Chief Investment Office currently stands on this theme. Now on a global scale, the publication Energy Transitions available up on UBS.com for your reference. Though again, for clients of UBS, please contact your UBS financial advisor to receive a copy of the report directly. Jay Dobson, thank you again for joining us today.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.